Hey, you've got this frequency, 98.3. That frequency is what you're picking up when you tune that radio.
Very impressive.
You can sit on the moon and most likely pick up CKOD clear as a bell.
Fascinating. Your analysis seems logical.
CKOD.
Good. Great. Not bad at all. A-okay. Tickety-boo. Fine, thanks. All good. It's going gangbusters. Just great. When people ask us how we're doing, we often say fine, even if it's not always the case. If you aren't fine, say something. To get help, call InfoSocial 811, because talking is the first step towards getting better. A message from the Gouvernement du Québec.
Good evening and welcome to the March 10th edition of Draw Text. Tonight we're going to present a full 45 minutes of the work of Jane Cortez and the Fire Spitters. Here she is.
Military spending, huge profits, and death.
Military spending, huge profits, and death. fucking Holocaust. Tell me I'm hallucinating. Tell me I'm fantasizing. Tell me I'm delirious. Tell me you know peace is better than war. That total decolonization is better than war. That the elimination of hunger is better than war. That the moon verging into the shadow of the earth is better than war. That night moving into day and day moving back into night is better than war. That the sound of the human voice in its calmness, in its shrillness, in its monumental invention of pitches is better than war. That the arrival of rain, the smell of something familiar, the blood circulating in your legs, the visitation of the sun, the conjunction of rivers, the vexation of your special nerve, and hope rising from the sole of your nose is better than war. Not for the excesses, not for the accumulations, not for the lips of magnetic lava,
not for the liver of explosive slits, not for the heart ready to shoot off like a volcano. There are no simple explanations. And the altar will not fit another skull. And there are no more volunteers. No mixture of eyelashes and drops of blood in the circle. No alliances drinking together in a night of dead events. No bulletproof faces in the air. No mask of erosion fermenting in slobber. No fetish trunk of sacrifices in disguise. Only the space of exasperation left by the advance. Only juice from heat of its possession. The injunction of shadows. Collectivity of ants. Tongue of deified soot. Flesh of incarcerated bones. But no simple explanations. Not for madness reproducing itself through the uterus in the throat. Not for sharks having feeding frenzies in the middle of foreheads. Not for sentimental passwords of vomit splattering pages. No simple explanations. Let the index finger take responsibility for its smell. Let the chickens protrude from drums. Let the lagoon, the boat, the ancestors enter pores of a poet of pretty smiles. This piece is passing up the motif of sorrow. Let it pass. Let the words split and erupt and dry into snake pulsations. Spit three times into ruby dust of your own snot and paste it on callus of your self-conscious itch. I say lung, fire, a mouthpiece tremble, still warm and metal stone, conjuration and syntax, inverted stump under solitary root of erratic fulcrums, weed of pain, of rupture, of panic. Let it go down like body and soul in the horn of Coleman Hawkins. Sink into insurrection of red shanks, into high-pitched voltage of mosquito hums, into liquefied oak of Egyptian flames, sparrow house bubble of quiver. Let your divination fall like body and soul in the horn of Coleman Hawkins. Ritual fart and navel of rebellious sting. Urination and energetic repulsion. Poetic orgasm and guttural belch of erotic storm. Let your dynamism grant. I say, make it shake forward like shimmering tumors of okra stew. Shake forward on a speckled canvas of minstrel bandages. Shake into sucking tubes of midnight flies. Into subdominant tilts of flinching eyeballs. Into the intrinsic elasticity of violent impulses. Conform to the evolution of your own syllables. To the revolution of your own stanzas. Because suddenly it will be too soon. Suddenly it will be too late. Suddenly it will be too sudden. And there'll be no tuning forks left in palm of a poet on a cold morning. No deposits of fat left on neck of a blues at the crossroads. No spell of inspiration waiting at foot of a cocaine pyramid. No juju leaves hidden in the center of the whirlwind. Only abusive forces in absolute oppositions to revolts. Only burial grounds of radioactive mud. Only bellies of unfinished compositions. And time dismantling itself between invisible sticks. But no simple explanations. the flesh of incarcerated bones, not for the tongue of deified soot, not for the womb of hoodoo hollering bebop ghost. No simple explanations. No simple explanations. Many mysterious people hide out in the remote white areas of South Africa. Some speak the Afrikaans language of apartheid. Others speak the English language of capitalism. Most are very reactive, very repressive, very racist, and very, very violent. They whip out their tongues like prehistoric reptiles, slashing and thrashing black youths to pieces. They wade through funeral crowds, tearing off heads and chewing through armpits of black mourners. They load their victims up with tear gas and rubber bullets and sit on borders, scooping out marrows and eating dead Namibian corpses. They are the biggest bone collectors in the world and spare no expense to keep their one-way flow of white propaganda flowing through mouths of international entertainers. And because they create fetishes out of gold mines, black gold miners, migrant mining compounds, and whittle reserves, they have been most successful at avoiding European condemnation and in widening their trail of corruption through resolutions and calls for economic sanctions and in keeping their brains stuck in the inaccessible swamps of white Africana nationalism and in making the perpetuation of supremacy a way of life and in convincing the Western Bloc to support them for their strategic location. And no, it's not unusual for them to display photographs of Africans killing Africans, of black soldiers stealing from refugee camps, of black armies keeping the military institution of colonialism alive, because their rumps are filled with negatives of fake black liberation groups. They are the producers of war zones and squatter camps. They arm and pay Jonas Savimbi to disrupt Angola. They organize and pay Portuguese-speaking black and white mercenaries to destabilize Southern Africa. They use people like Gacha Buthelezi and the Inganga Zulu delegation to provoke riots and de-radicalize black townships. They design and sell new and old forms of tribalism. Their mixture of European tribal lifestyles rely on a policy of black tribal separation. And because they are cold-blooded killers with notorious reputations for breaking up families and for murdering men like Steve Biko and jailing leaders like Nelson Mandela and hanging poets like Benjamin Moloise and banishing and brutalizing women who reject their ideology of apartheid and calling it their holy duty, they think they can preserve their wild, brutal Bantu stand butts and bulldozer lips forever. They think they can be the great civilizing messiahs of genocide, quoting scriptures and praying in the ashes of black African children, praying for a baptismal feast of more special privileges, praying that countries such as Mozambique won't be able to sever the labor links of dependency, praying that wars, bacterial contamination, drought, and nuclear threats will keep all of Africa fragmented. Praying that they can go on praying and refining their techniques of lying and praying and capitalizing on whatever they can capitalize and play upon in hopes of retaining power, in hopes of securing their survival, in hopes that all their hopes won't fall under the blue funk of smoking stones in a hopeless state of terror, in hopes that a holding preformed pattern of hope will hold them together in a republic of hope. But only we know what's happening on the hopeful side. And since they're not progressively hip enough to understand revolutionary expectations and are not religiously righteous enough to read hieroglyphic graffiti, and since they would rather steal land, suck suck on precious metals and live off the high wages of cheap labor instead of accepting one person, one vote, then let's hope they'll be technologically sophisticated enough to sail through the air on corrugated rooftops. Let's hope they'll be intellectually educated enough to flee on the Bantu Express. Let's hope they'll be economically solvent enough to shimmer in the dust storm of their plunging defense budget. Let's hope they'll be independently bullish enough to confront the extinction of their savagery and physically fit enough to swallow the bloody stools of their beloved system of apartheid. Let's hope for that dark, dark day of liberation, for that gloomy day of unification, for that black day of transformation, for that drunk day of modernization, for that bleak day of peace and happiness and all the beautifulness in the universe.
Praise for the poets, hey! In this day.
By earthquakes, seen erupting volcanoes and devastating avalanches too. I've seen typhoons rising from oceans, seen tornadoes ripping, hurricanes howling, and forest fires out of control. Now a nuclear reactor is exploding, and I've got those Chernobyl 3 miles. Floods and landslides, seen streets turned into red rivers roaring. I've seen thunderbolts and cyclones, seen blizzards and sandstorms blasting and blowing. Now a nuclear reactor is exploding, and I've got those Chernobyl 3 miles. I've seen reservoirs dry up and knew that moisture in the soil could cease to exist. I've seen objects destroyed by lightning and seen humans stripped of flesh, trees stripped of leaves, bones stripped of bones in a drought. Now the rain showers are coming with radiation, and I've got those Chernobyl 3 miles. Nagasaki and Hiroshima. I've heard cries swirling from a chemical plant in Bhopal, India. I've seen radioactive dust in Nevada and Utah. Heard screams echoing in from the Ural Mountains too. Now a nuclear reactor is exploding, and I've got those Chernobyl 3 miles. Away milk and lettuce, wash my hair, my hands, and my shoes, but the winds keep shifting and drifting, and I've got those Chernobyl 3 mile island blues. I said reactors breed plutonium and blood cells pay their dues. Radiation keeps leaking and seeping, that's why I've got the Chernobyl 3 mile island blues. Now nuclear power plants can't be dismantled. No way to dispose of the waste. But we've got to shut down the reactors or have the Chernobyl 3 mile island blues every day. Yeah, deadly radiation levels high. Deadly radiation flying in the sky. Deadly radiation swarming with debris. Deadly radiation bombing in the sea. Deadly radiation forming on the clouds. Deadly radiation steaming in the bowels. Deadly radiation falling through and through. And I've got the Chernobyl 3 mile island. Deadly. fingers full of fetish dolls, hurricanes run. And on those fuchsia-dotted lips, where sad African ballads drink, solitude intensifies. And I hear a spell shaking, Bella Cruz almost bending, crying, Icaro, Icaro, Icaro. Superstitious flames cut through sentimental rainbows, full of love affairs intruding, and formless realities sloping, weaving, overlapping, half moaning, you blow your axe. Ay, chocolate, salafiani. They say, through your horn full of dancers, laughter comes. And in your purple velvet mute, you keep a walk so fine, a Roomba so strong, your yucca in root, a green smell, a low pitch, a thrilling vibrating cry, stridulating through the swamps, through the city, through the time effects. You keep the mangoes in flame, you keep the sambas in tune, you keep the tangles in slice. Domo, 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 chocolate, domo. Ay, chocolate. They say into your breath full of wah-wahs, scream. And with your knees dipping into these spirits, you carve your shout. And I hear the signals barking, blood vessels almost breaking, libating on the sands of Havana crossing, fast blades falling, hot brass melting, tongue forks tuning, holding, spreading, leaping, squawking, rhythms rising, modulating, salsa striking. Ay, 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 chocolate, lyrical chocolate. Chocolate, chocolate, lewa, 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 chocolate, podaren, podaren, chocolate, your fire. Yeah, through the belt, through the navel, through the impulses, whoop, through the sweat, through the veins, through the belt covered boop. You keep the tangles in oil, you keep meringues in pro, you keep a cha-cha in flush. Whoa, chocolate, whoa! Chocolate, I like the way you blow your horn. Chocolate, I like the way you blow your horn. Yeah, I like the way you blow your horn, man.
Paul Robeson stood out in his passport, a committee of one. A committee of one who covered a lot of territory. The territory of dedication. A dedication to the freedom of his people. I knew him in that way. As a prominent artist, complete with talent, with democratic ideas, and revolutionary gestures. Never, never holding back, never, never backing down, never, never selling out. Projecting the story of dignity and love instead of the story of greed and corruption. And I want to be warm like him, fun-loving like him, creative like him, unselfish like him, with his kind of awareness, his kind of generosity, his kind of critical understanding, kind of strength, kind of vision, kind of energy, kind of power, kind of spirit, kind of courage, kind of sensitivity. Never, never, never holding back. Never, never, never backing down. Never, never, never selling out. Always projecting the story of dignity and love instead of the story of greed and corruption. I knew him in that way, in the way of the spirituals I love, even though he didn't sing in the style of my choice. But what does style have to do with commitment? After all, contributions go beyond songs. And I liked his baritone bass speaking and booming out in artistic brilliance. A protest against hatred and fascism. A protest against racism and oppression. A protest against terror and fear. His song was an intense song of ancestral memories. His song was a song of faith and resistance. His song was a song of hope and creativity. Always making connections, always being progressive, always trying to live the life of struggle and determination instead of the life of glitter and degradation. And I like that. The fact that he could interpret the symbol that his photograph had become, a powerful force significant to masses of people. I understood him in that way. As a person complete with confidence and political intent. Never holding back, never backing down, never selling out. Projecting the story of dignity and love instead of the story of fame and corruption. I knew him in those ways, and I like that. Never, never holding back. Never, never backing down. Never, never selling out. Under the urination of astronauts and the ejaculation of polluted sparrows and the evacuation of acid brain matter, everything is wonderful. Except for the invasion and occupation of Grenada. Except for the avalanche of blood coagulating in El Salvador. Except for the brutal apartheid system raging in South Africa. Except for the threat of intervention in Nicaragua. Except for the war of repression in Namibia. Except for Pinochet killing again in Chile. Except for the famine in Ethiopia. Except for the torrential rainfall of bombs falling in the Middle East. Everything is wonderful. Everything is wonderful. Everything is wonderful, except for the invasion and occupation of Grenada. Everything is wonderful, except for the avalanche of blood coagulating in El Salvador. Everything is wonderful, except for the brutal apartheid system raging in South Africa. Everything is wonderful, except for the threat of intervention in Nicaragua. Everything is wonderful, except for the war of repression in Namibia. Everything is wonderful, except for Pinochet.
rainbow of bombs falling in the Middle East. Everything is wonderful. Everything is wonderful. Everything is everything. Wonderful and wonderful. Everything is everything. Wonderful and wonderful. Everything is everything. Wonderful and wonderful.
So you've been listening to Jane Portez and the Fire Spitters in their 1986 album entitled Maintain Control. We heard 10 tracks, including Maintain Control, Economic Love Song, Tell Me, No Simple Explanations, Briefing, Kai Kai for the Poets, Deadly Radiation Blues, Chocolate, Commitment, and Everything is Wonderful to conclude. So the Fire Spitters include Ornette Coleman on alto saxophone. He was on track 4, No Simple Explanations. Bass, Al McDowell. Guitar, Burn Nix. Percussion, Gennaro Coleman. And the voice and poetry was by, of course, Jane Portez. Tenor saxophone, Charles Moffat Jr. So, Jane Portez was an African-American poet, activist, small press publisher, and spoken word performance artist. She was born in 1934 and passed away December 28, 2012. She was married to jazz saxophonist Ornette Coleman, and their son is jazz drummer Gennaro Coleman. And in 1975, she married painter, sculptor, and printmaker Melvin Edwards, and they lived in Dakar, Senegal, and New York City. So I hope you enjoyed that. We'll conclude the show with the work of Ornette Coleman. Here she is.
Ethelbert Miller, who's a mutual friend, says that American poets are all children of Walt Whitman, and you would consider yourself in that lineage.
Oh, absolutely.
Tell us why.
Well, I think because I'm a part of the chorus that's singing America, you know, that song of ourselves. Whitman's, I'm a child of Whitman in a pragmatic sense, that poetry, poets are not businessmen, but we're forced often in a position to represent ourselves in that arena, to dicker for the check, to find ways of, new ways of patronage to support what we do. Filling out grantsmanship applications after application, sitting on panels, entering the university system, teaching, doing all of these things that are sometimes antithetical to who we really are. Because unlike, to me, this nation is upside down in terms of how it treats its artists in the fine arts across the board. The visual artists, those in the world of dance, those in the world of theater. And the ascension of Hollywood has eclipsed our truly wonderful artists. I mean, it's to me, it's a tragedy that the jazz has left the club, the venues where it was born, and is now to be found in the museums, an artifact. And I think that's a tragedy. And that because music has been devalued in our school systems across the nation, we don't have those ears that are so necessary to perpetuate the love and appreciation of that excellent, that incredible musicianship. Well, that's true of poetry as well. Poetry is still looked at as something that's not necessary, that's a luxury, that's not a vital part of life. And yet there are so many, you know, it's so easy to, you know, to meet someone who will shyly open a drawer and pull out a manuscript and show you that they write poetry. But poets are of no monetary value and therefore are of no value at all.
What is the value that poetry and art bring to a society?
It makes, it's man's highest dialogue with himself. It enriches, it deepens life. That's something it shares with religious belief. It gives you a reason to go on. For the sake of the cool, the magician stumbles in after a long jam, peeling notes off the walls. He washes his dry, so long ago hands, settles in for a sleep till 2 afternoon. Just another escapade in rayon, prelude to a shower and the joys of happy hour. To mute or not mute, hush now, such tough, satisfying labor to make 'em sing. Shades of bliss, molten notes, star hot, stalking inspired ears, make 'em sing. Song violent in the blood, that soul stomp of leather to the wood, hand meeting hand to make 'em sing. For the sake of the cool, to be obvious must be forcedly understated, and what has snapped, held together by strong clams, until a needle and thread can be applied. For the sake of the cool, stupid risks must be taken, but risks nevertheless. Things uttered and dismissed and reconsidered and mitigated until terms are defined and mutually understood. For the sake of the cool, no one's hero goes to jail for trifling things. And indirectly, jazz allows men to worship men without onus. Spirit, dig, coon, holla, hallelujah, riffs all rush and muddy. But the women must fend for themselves and make 'em sing for the sake of Days of Our Lives, as the hands drip through the hourglass. Yes, I wrote for Days. That was a real adventure. It was very exciting, for the year or so that it lasted, and I was the youngest member of the staff, and I had it was quite an experience, because writing for television is merciless when it comes to deadline. It knows no mercy. It eats writers. It eats everything you have to give. And so it was difficult in one way, because my portrait was subsumed. I mean, it was just gone. And I frankly was worried about that and depressed about it, because I didn't know, you know, what's going on here. But what I found is that after, you know, my style of writing, you know, before working for the soap opera, I was still writing on the legal tablets and the secretarial pads and writing things out in longhand and, you know, taking, you know, 10, you know, 15 drafts and still not getting it right. But after that stint as a soap opera writer, I could crank. The poems, when the poetry came back, when it returned, I mean, it just returned with a vengeance. And I found that I could sit down and those poems would just start coming. They would just flow. It was almost as though they were writing me instead of me writing them. And so that was, and I said, wow, look at this. So when my peers look at my books, you know, when I go to poetry book fairs and there are these very fine, thin, lovely books of poetry, and then, my volumes are considerably, you know, 300 pages, you know, fat books of poetry. And people say, how do you do this? You know, why are you so prolific? Well, that's a part of it. That experience freed me from whatever there was in my psyche that made me hesitate or take so long to finish the work. I was able to, at that point, see, you know, just I had just become a better worker, a better craftswoman. And it would, if it were collected. So I'll have to just select it, be selective and have a slimmer volume.
All right. Well, talking about your poetry is one thing, but hearing it is quite another. So do you have something you'd like to read for us?
Sure. Why don't I start with one of the sonnets? I had an idea for 100 sonnets. And every now and then, sometimes you want to play with the traditional and you want to maybe do something new with a traditional. So the idea came to me of jazz sonnets. And I couldn't tell you what a jazz sonnet was at the time I had the idea. And I applied for some grants, the NEA and whatnot, which I did not receive, to do these sonnets. And then I just abandoned the idea. 10 years later, the first one showed up, and I recognized that, and I called them American Sonnets, and this is number 12, after Robert Duncan. My earliest dreams linger, wronged spirits who will not rest. Dusky crows astride the sweetbriar seek to fly the orchard sky. Is this the world I loved? Groves of perfect oranges and streets of stars where the sad eyes of my youth wander the atomic age paradise. Tasting the blood of a stark and wounded puberty. Oh, what years ago, what rapture lost in white heat of skin, walls that patina my heart's despair. What fear disturbs my quiet nights grazing, stampedes my soul? Oh, memory, I sweat the eternal weight of graves.
Now that is absolutely intense. That was the first one that I pulled out of the book. The fact that it was dedicated to Robert Duncan is an important part of it, but just the ending. Why don't you elaborate on that ending, if you will?
Well, I think in that last sentence, it capitalizes what I believe my job is as a poet. Almost as though I were in the process of storytelling, resurrecting. By being the best craft person I can be, then I can honor those memories of those I treasure. Whether it's a friend, whether it's a community, or my vision of a community, what I see, how I define, as my place, which is Los Angeles, defines me, I in turn define it. And I want to be as true to this process as possible. So I'm obligated, I feel, to do my best. So when I say I sweat the eternal weight of graves, I am embracing the responsibility that attends that process. One of the things that I've decided that where my writing has value, and I felt that I was a part of a community that wasn't being documented historically, that events and things were occurring on a level that no one seemed to recognize, or if they did want to recognize, certainly didn't want to publicize. So I was interested in making a record of that, so to speak, and I chose poetry and short fiction so far as my media in which to do that. I wanted to tell the stories. You know, that the popular word is griot in the African American community.
G-R-I-O-T.
That's correct. And I wanted to perform that function. to become a medium for those who couldn't speak, with whom I shared a common landscape and experience. And Los Angeles is so different as an urban landscape. It's much more different than the usual city that you find in the United States. There's no tradition. The terrain is extremely fluid, especially the cultural terrain. There's no way to nail it down. There's no way to corner the market effectively in Los Angeles. And so in the last 30 years, a very diverse and interesting group of literati have grown up there, and I'm among them. And so coming from the black side of town, from across the track, so to speak, from Watts, I have been interested in keeping those stories in the forefront of the dialogue. And I do that through my performance and poetry, through publishing my work, through insisting that there is another way of looking at these matters, these issues.
So that concludes this week's edition of Drama Text. That was the work of Wanda Pullman, late poet from California. We'll be back next week with a CQUT funding drive show. Till then.
Being vaccinated against COVID-19.
Oh, merci beaucoup, Madame Saint-Onge, d'avoir fait l'intro de Francis et les exerciceurs sur les ondes de CKUT Radio McGill.